Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The city's new police chief, Kimberly Jacobs, has 33 years on the force, but less than a week at the top of that food chain. She's the first woman, but it's not her first. Her experience has breadth and depth, from street patrols to a liaison to the Columbus City Council. She joins us today in the studio to talk about her new job and how she wants to manage it. Welcome to the show, Columbus Chief of Police Kimberly Jacobs.
Well, thank you, Ann. I really appreciate the opportunity to come talk to you and going to share some of my ideas and let people get to know me.
And she'll only be with us for the first segment. So if you do have a question or comment for Chief Jacobs, give us a call now, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You spent about seven and a half years on patrol on the west side. What did you learn there particularly that translates into how you'll run the Division of Police now?
Well, one of the things that you learn in patrol is that there's some ongoing issues that officers have to deal with on a regular basis. Domestic violence, DUI, or drunk driving, and just some of the neighborhood problems that we have to go back and try to resolve or help people problem solve with. And so I'd like to look into some ideas that maybe we can get some long-term solutions to some of those ongoing problems. But the officers face a lot of issues all day long, and they see a lot of people at their worst. It might be the worst day that anybody's ever had, and the officers have to try to come help them or resolve it.
And that never ends. That's always going to be the way it is when something like that.
It'll never end. It's people that are either victims or suspects or, might have just seen something that's horrific, and they have to help, take charge of that scene. And it's hard for the officers to be able to do that on a daily basis without feeling some repercussions. So I'd like to make sure that we do what we can for our officers to help them deal with that stress and, work on some wellness issues.
Some folks are concerned that a job like yours is filled through a political appointment instead of an election. And how do you justify the process, and what gave you the edge in the process this time, you think?
Well, we have a civil service commission in Columbus that makes sure that the process is fair. We've been tested all of our previous promotional ranks, and it's done by an agency that's not within the Division of Police, and they're overseen by civilians that are appointed. So I believe that the process itself is one that gives everybody a fair shot, and the last promotion, this one to chief, was selected by people that I trust to run the city and to run the safety department. So I believe that they have the best interests of the city when they make that selection.
So what do you think gave you the edge?
Well, the mayor advised me that he was looking for leadership from the front, and I believe that I've demonstrated that I've been able to get out there and resolve some problems within the Division of Police and make some moves that are necessary, even though sometimes it ruffles some feathers. In addition to that, it's about, being efficient, and everywhere that I go, I ask questions about why are we doing it that way? Can we do it a better way? Best practices is the only way to go. We're accredited, and that helps us, but you have to constantly be looking for best practices, and so efficiencies are how we get there, by using best practices and then that. And the last thing is innovation. And, the saying goes that 80% of the people don't like change and 20% do. I'm in that 20%. And so because I like change, I'm willing to listen to ideas, and our officers, our civilian personnel, all have ideas on how they could do their job better, so I'm going to be out there listening to that.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Columbus's new chief of police, Kimberly Jacobs. You got to get your calls in quick if you want to talk to her, 614-292-8513. You were in charge of the redistricting plan. That was a few years ago now?
It started in 2009, and okay. We finished it up in 2010.
And it's considered a success, but I was wondering if there were any hard feelings, because clearly there were conflicts at the time with the force.
I think the people that had to suffer through that process, not knowing what was going to happen to them or their assignments or their days off, may very well have some hard feelings. But I think a lot of people understood that this was something that I was tasked with, and that I did the job that I was told to do. I did it as best I could considering the circumstances. It wasn't the circumstances that I would have chosen. I think that communication helps make things better. And so we will have some opportunities to have a lot better communication as we look at any other future changes.
You know, something like the redistricting plan seems, by its very essence, something that's going to change again. Or is it going to become static again?
The plan has always been to reevaluate that on a regular basis, no less than once a year. The problem with the plan that we had in place before was it was stagnant. And as we needed changes made, we just tweaked it here and there. And there was no overview of the entire process and where we needed people. So the plan with the redistricting is always to go back and reevaluate.
That's part of the
plan. Absolutely. And we'll be doing that at least once a year, if not sooner.
You also worked in internal affairs. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering to what extent that experience helps you do your job, given the ongoing across the country conflict regarding civil liberties and control and police and, you know, any law enforcement.
The honor of having the job of policing in society is one that I don't take for granted one day. And with that honor, we have an awful lot of responsibility and authority. We have to make sure that we don't abuse our authority. I do not like any kind of tension between the division of police and our community. And you see that in other cities where there is that tension. By reducing that doubt and building trust, we can have a very good partnership going on with our community. And we need that because the community needs the police and the police need the community to get along. So in internal affairs, I was able to see what concerns people the most. And fortunately, here in Columbus, our problems are fairly low considering what some other cities face as far as corruption and all those different kinds of things. So I want to keep it very much a trust relationship that we have with the community. And by knowing how our officers act and knowing what questions the citizens have, I answered the complaint line for 4 years as a sergeant.
Oh, that's a job.
Absolutely. You find out that very often the rub comes when they don't understand how we are doing our job or why we're doing it that way. So we educate all the time. We have a program to educate people in the media that report on us so they understand why officers do their job the right way. We have a citizen police academy that educates citizens on how we do our job, and that goes a long ways towards building that cooperation and trust.
As far as the internal affairs position goes, that's not necessarily a popular position. Is that something you sought, or was it, again, something you were tasked with?
I was tasked with. About that time in 2001, they had already started looking at reorganizing internal affairs, but I got a phone call from my deputy chief one day, and he says, Kim, you're going to internal affairs? And I'm like, did I do something? You know, I thought he meant like for an interview or something like that. And he says, no, you're being assigned there. I said, okay, great. And I was tasked with getting all of the ideas implemented. And I had 4 months to do it. And so we brought in a lot of new people. We brought in a lot of new procedures, put a team together of people that were working on that, and really revamped it for the benefit of the city. Some of the officers didn't like having to go to internal affairs now for the investigation of a citizen complaint, which is very unusual in the country.
Okay.
But I believe it's a very good practice. And so the onus of going to internal affairs is there for the officers, but it's also an investigation that's being done by very objective people that don't have any, you know, personnel that they have to supervise, so they have a very objective point of view.
So what happens is somebody calls and complains about some officer's behavior or
whether it's rude or whatever,
or how they processed something, and then the officer is automatically called in?
If they are the focus of the allegation, right, then the internal affairs investigator will call the officer in to ask them.
No matter what. Now, before, didn't that happen anyway? I mean, what was different before?
The investigations were conducted by the officer's chain of command.
Okay.
And so the sergeant that worked with the officer was the one that was doing the investigation. And some people perceive a bias when they are working that close together.
You're the first woman police chief in Columbus, but it's not your first, as I mentioned earlier. You're the first woman from your rank to become commander and later deputy chief. When it says you're the first woman from your rank, what does that mean? You're the first woman, period, or what does it mean from your rank?
We have previously never had, in 95, a woman that was a commander. And then in 2009, I was the first one to be a deputy chief. Now, subsequent to my promotion to commander, we had more females become commanders. And so I was the first, but now we have more.
But you're not the last either.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And I hope that's true all the way through.
Like most women who achieve such a first, you've said you don't want to make it about your gender, but about your experience. And so does it make any difference then to the public to have a woman as police chief or deputy chief or commander? Or could we just have all men and be just as well off? Does it bring anything to the table?
Absolutely. I was at a restaurant the other night, and a husband and wife asked if I would talk to their little girl because she's thought about becoming a police officer. And so I greeted her and said, did you want to be a police officer? And she said, well, maybe, you know. And I said, well, you can be anything you want to be. And when I was in college, I was recruited because becoming a police officer wasn't anything that had ever been considered for women on the street that I knew of. And so I believe that being a woman in this position brings a lot of people's thoughts to, hey, maybe I should do that. We only have about 11% women, although we're 50% of the population.
Which is below the national average of 14%.
So I believe that because they can see me, I'm going to be visible. It might draw more women in and other people that know that we are underrepresented in some of our percentages. But I really, truly do believe that that diversity of ideas, cultures, ways of looking at things adds a lot of value to our department. We do not need the same idea. We need a lot of different ideas.
So, as I said, 14% of police forces nationwide are made up of women, and just 2% of chiefs of police. I guess that doubled in the last few years, and you're way beyond that now. You talked about, I get the idea that you're glad to mentor other women.
Absolutely.
We're working their way up. But what about the recruitment of women? Do you think it hasn't been what it could be, and that there's some way to step that up?
Yes, I do. I've participated in a couple of our recruiting videos. But I think that we need to make sure that women and others understand that, you know, we are so big, we have so many different opportunities. It's not just about patrol work, even though you'd have to do that initially. But there's a lot of different opportunities to express yourself here. And that's what they need to know. You know, it's not just about being strong and big. It's about being able to have some compassion and empathy and helping people solve their problems. And I think that we have a lot of different people that are capable of doing that. And so it's also the message that we sell. You know, we have to tell them about the hours on second shift and third shift and having Tuesdays and Wednesdays off. But there's a lot of other pros and cons to the whole job that they need to know about.
And I suppose that message that you want to send out isn't necessarily limited to some kind of script just for women and just for men. I mean, there's personality types that you'd probably like more of in the force.
Absolutely. And we need people that are confident with their own abilities. I mean, you can be 5 foot. Well, look at our most recent Debbie Ayers, you know, not a woman of tall stature, but able to handle the job. And that's what they need to know, is that we can have a lot of different sizes and thoughts and all those kinds of things, but it adds an awful lot to our ability to deal with issues by having that variety.
Well, thank you for joining us today to tell us those thoughts, and hope to have you back again soon.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Kimberly Jacobs, she's Columbus's new chief of police. Coming up, we're going to have an open forum, so get your ideas ready for that, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation, clear, straight, open, from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 until 4. This is 89.7 NPR News, and it's 48 degrees in downtown Columbus with some light rain. Expect showers off and on throughout the afternoon today, and cloudy skies, a high of 63. Clouds for tonight, a low of 36 degrees. There is a slight chance of showers for Tuesday, partly sunny and a colder day, a high of just 46. Mostly cloudy Tuesday night and a low of 32. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We have an open forum going. If you want to give us a call and tell us what you're thinking about when it comes to the news, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Just heard from Columbus's brand new chief of police, Kimberly Jacobs. What do you think about that? First woman in that job. Had a couple firsts before that. Good, bad, don't care, doesn't matter. Let me know, 614-292-8513. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, post your question or comment there. I am interested in these internet cafes. That's the top of the page in the Columbus Dispatch today. No rules yet on internet cafes. Legislation is pending in the, for a year now, in the Ohio General Assembly. It was proposed to give the state more oversight. I guess there's hundreds of these unregulated storefront gambling operations popping up throughout Ohio. What do you think about that? Should they be regulated? Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine called it a wild, wild west out there. Let me know, 614-292-8513. Casinos, horse tracks, lottery games, bingo halls, and raffles, those are all regulated, but not these internet cafes. Do you think they should be, at least to level the playing field? 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What else is out there? U.S.-Afghan deal cements relationship. Yay. What do you think? Did you have a good Easter? Do you want to talk about Easter? 614-292-8513. You know I'll babble on. I have plenty to talk about myself. I'd rather hear from you. Jeff in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Hi.
I just wanted to weigh in on that, what you, Jacobs, was saying. She nailed it right on when she was just at the very end there. She said that, talked about how females will have a lot of times a different perspective because of, if they're not big and strong, they have to think of ways to, how to deal with things as far as empathy and compassion out there on the street. And that is exactly what I've been telling people about her being named the chief, was that females, just because they are raised that in a different kind of environment as far as because they're female, that they have had to think of different ways. And I've noticed that some decisions that Chief Jacobs has made earlier in her career that are criticized is because men are going right to the well, that's because she's a female is why she made that decision, rather than, because she's weak, rather than that because she's, had to think of a more compassionate way to deal with things. And I think that that is overlooked, and I really wish her well, and I know she'll do well, and I'm glad that she's named chief. I think it's a historic moment, but that is the one thing I think needs to be driven home, is that she's, just because she might have a decision that might seem weaker, that it's not exactly that. It's more than likely because she's had to think more compassionately in her life.
Jeff, you're a Columbus police officer. Is that attitude, though, that it's because she's a woman, as prevalent as some naysayers would like to believe, or is it? How would you rate that in 2012 terms? Is it just as bad as it always was, or getting better, or what?
Just in my limited perspective, mm-hmm. in my limited scope from where I am, I've seen it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Although there's grumblings, but it seems that people are at least accepting it. But there was almost an alarmist fear of, oh no, things are going to be horrible now. Things are going to change, and certain policies are going to change. And, it seemed as though people wanted to cling to, crazy ideas that they think are going to happen because she's chief. And, myself, I have to be careful. I have to, I can't sit there and completely come right out and tell them they're full of baloney. Mm-hmm. I gotta play the middle ground, like, well, I don't think it'll be that bad, And just kind of got to play it that way. Otherwise, then I'm labeled the weak person,
right.
And so, but I think it wasn't as bad because I haven't heard too much. But the little grumblings I hear every time, every once in a while, you hear something sexist. You know, something that's you know, just a joke. You know, directed her way. Or, you know, about because of the fact that she's a female. And it just is sad. It's sad that that's the case. But also trying to look at the glass half full rather than half empty. I think that that at least. It's more accepted than I think it would have been 10 years ago, mm-hmm. you know. So I think that it's a good thing. I think that most people accept it, and I think that they'll see once she's been sitting in the chief seat for a while, I think that they'll understand it's not as bad as they feared it would be.
All right, yeah. We have nothing to fear but fear itself when it comes
right,
to that, right?
Exactly, true.
Well, yeah. Thanks for calling, Jeff. I appreciate it.
All righty, no problem.
Take care. 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What do you think about having a new chief of police who happens to be a woman, Kimberly Jacobs? We had her on in the first segment. What do you think from outside the department or from inside? I'd like to hear from more of you. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. There was another story by Misty Crane in the Metro State section in the Dispatch today. The smaller cancer clinics are failing is the headline. Financial pressures forcing many to close and sell out to hospitals. I wondered if anybody out there could give us their opinion of these smaller cancer clinics, what they're like, what happens with them. We mostly hear about, you know, OSU and that kind of a thing. But what do you think? I mean, have you been to one of those clinics, and what was your impression of them? Did you like it? Did you prefer it over the big places, the big hospitals? 614-292-8513. And of course, lots of us out there recognize the name Mike Wallace from 60 Minutes. Some of us grew up with Mike Wallace on the TV set on Sundays. I think it was right after Prudential's Wild Kingdom or something like that. What do you think about Mike Wallace? Any ideas? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Do you remember Mike Wallace from 60 Minutes? He was 93 years old. I was very surprised to hear how old he was. Not that 93 is that old, but I was surprised. I figured he was more in his 80s from the last time I saw him. Will 60 Minutes ever be the same? Has it been the same? It's changed a lot. Personnel's changed a lot. Do you still watch 60 Minutes? Is it still a must-watch on Sundays for you? There is nobody calling right now. We could just go to dead air. But, of course, I won't let that happen. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. What do you care about? Bob Vitale of the Dispatch wrote about the paper map going the way of the public telephone, which I don't know. You know, I'm a little concerned about that because I think there must be some kind of edification from opening up a big map and looking at the whole state or looking at the whole city at once and kind of seeing things in perspective instead of just looking on your smartphone or your, you know, iPad or whatever you might have and looking at it and telling you where to go instead of seeing a map in front of you and making those decisions on your own. Edification, maybe some brain cells, you know, that are used to use a regular conventional map versus being told where to go. 614-292-8513 if you want to call and tell me what you think about that. We have an email from Kelly. She's asking a question. I cannot answer it, but maybe somebody out there can. What, if anything, has developed over the last 6 to 12 months regarding the Cooper Stadium building and property? It seems as though no progress has taken place. I wish I could tell you, Kelly, what's going on with that. It seems like I've read something about it recently, but I can't remember it. Maybe somebody on the staff can figure that one out for me. Cooper Stadium. What's going on with developing the Cooper Stadium building and property? Arshot was interested in it before, interested in making it a racetrack and also educational center. Okay, now the lines are lit up like a Christmas tree, so now you got to give the screener just a little bit extra time. So keep calling. Don't hang up. We'll get you on the air. I'll turn to Mike in Worthington. You're on the air, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann.
Can you hear me? Yeah, I can hear you. Great. You wanted to talk about 60 Minutes.
Yeah, it's been my favorite show for many, many years, and I know it comes on at 7 o'clock in this area, and it seems like it's got to be one of the most popular shows CBS has, but invariably they'll preempt it as if it were a soap opera for basketball, baseball, golf, whatever's on, and they'll delay it for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes. It's just so aggravating that what I think should be their most popular show, they treat it like a dog.
Well, something that you think of as more serious being preempted by sports.
Yeah.
Sports that you're not interested in.
Well, I am interested in them, but it seems like a show as popular as 60 Minutes should command its own spot, not just string it after who knows what or when it will end because of half times, overtimes. It's just aggravating. You don't know when it's going to start.
When did they start doing that with the advent of cable television and all the competition that way?
I can't remember, and it seems like it was not always that way, but it seems more recently it's always that way.
Well, it's interesting you compared it to soap operas, because it used to really anger soap opera fans when they would preempt it for things like, you know, assassinations and other disasters.
Hey, I feel their pain.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, Mike.
All right.
Take care. Yep. Right. Scott in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Ann. I appreciate the open forum here this morning. Basically, I just wanted to call in and thank Mayor Coleman and everyone involved for the proposal to remove the Fifth Avenue Dam as well as the Main Street Dam, both on the Olentangy and Scioto River. I think what they proposed sounds fantastic. I like the idea of making the streams more free flowing, both from a fishing standpoint, both from a naturalist standpoint, as well as the opportunity to link the bike paths. I think it's gonna really connect the city, both north to south, and I think it's gonna beautify the city.
Someone wrote a letter to the editor in the Dispatch today, complaining that $18 million was being spent on that, and that could have been better spent improving infrastructure in the inner city, buying and demolishing vacant properties, or and that kind of a thing. What about that criticism?
Well, I mean, from my standpoint, I mean, I understand that any city of this size has issues such as that, and believe me, my heart goes out to those issues. But being one who loves the outdoors, being one who also recognizes the importance of people coming into our city, and you know, the Scioto River is we have two rivers that bisect the city, and so we have the Scioto Mile, and they've done a wonderful job with that. But what is our vision? What's standing right in front of us? And it's a section of the Scioto River that's like you've said, and like you've seen, it doesn't flow briskly. It does have an odor.
Yeah, late summer, it's kind of
Yeah, and you know what? Actually, in many cases, it can foster it can foster disease. I mean, and of course, someone with maybe a stronger biological background can probably hammer that out. But the point is, I understand that. Yeah, Columbus has many, many issues that I think Mayor Coleman is doing a fantastic job to address. But at the same time, I think that's one of them. And of course, I'm sure some of your listeners will have a different opinion regarding this. But I think it's going to really enliven downtown. I think people are going to, instead of shying away from those areas, they put a lot of money and time into the parks along the Scioto. I think it's going to beautify the area. And like I said, I think it's going to potentially be a link from the northern part of the city to the southern part of the city, and kind of rejuvenate downtown as well. So I'm looking forward to that. I hope I'm very Columbus proud. I'm hoping that
Okay. Well, thanks for the call, Scott.
Thank you.
Take care. 614-292-8513. We have an open forum today. Scott was just talking about the Scioto Mile and plans to undam the river, the Scioto River. We've been talking about our brand new police chief, Kimberly Jacobs. She was in the studio a few minutes ago talking with us. We are talking about paper maps next. Well, let's go to Pat Wynn Brown first to talk about her grandpa, and then we'll get to Jean. Pat Wynn Brown. Hi, Pat. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to say I'm very excited about Kimberly Jacobs being the chief of police. And my grandfather, Robert Wynn, was interim chief of police in Columbus during the 40s. And he was a huge influence in my life, a really strong, tough Welsh-Irish cop. And he, in fact, one of the family stories is when he was captain of the vice squad in Columbus, my mom's mom and dad owned a grocery store in German Village, and they ran the numbers in Columbus. And so when my mom and dad were dating, then my grandfather busted my other grandfather for running numbers. So that pretty much explains me.
That's a little family conflict never hurt anybody. It builds character, right?
Thanks for great family stories around the kitchen table.
Exactly. Well, Pat, thanks for telling us that.
He lived to be like 96 years old. I'm not sure how you feel about a woman chief, but he had a very, very powerful wife in my grandma, Aggie, and they were both teachers at the Boys Industrial School, and she was about 3 feet tall, but she was tough as nails. So I think he would approve of Kimberly. I really
Okay. Well, thanks for the call.
Welcome, Ann.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We'll just squeeze in old Jean from Bexley. Jean, you're on the air. You want to talk about paper maps. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, I just want to say that they probably will go the way of the world, like public phones, but I hate to see it happen. Our family loves to take road trips. In fact, last month we finally saw our 48th state.
And, wow, congratulations.
So I have 6 kids, and we've seen them all. And we love to get the map out and look and decide, and most of our trips are just, you know, let's go somewhere. Hey, this looks like a fun spot. And we have GPS, but it doesn't give us that same feel. And it has actually led us astray many times.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to pull out the old atlas in the back seat and look and say, okay, where do we really need to go? Because GPS does not know. So that's just my comment and thought.
Okay.
Thanks for the time.
Yeah, thanks for calling. We're going to take a quick break. Then we'll return to our open forum. So give us a call and join our conversation, 614-292-8513. We'll get to Joe in Westerville and Natalia in Columbus as soon as we come back. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear conversations with legendary personalities like comedian Joan Rivers.
My first joke was my husband killed himself and left a message that I have to visit him every day, so I had him cremated and sprinkled him in Neiman Marcus. Now, haven't missed a day.
Icons of the entertainment world on Fresh Air.
Fresh Air this afternoon at noon on 89.7 NPR News. You can support WOSU Public Media by becoming a volunteer. We're looking for volunteers to take calls of support from listeners during our upcoming spring membership drive. If you're interested in becoming a volunteer, just visit WOSU.org/volunteers or call 614-292-9678.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Jazz Orchestra, presenting RESPECT, The Legends of Soul, with guest artists Chris Pierce and Bobby Towns, April 11th through the 15th at the Southern Theater. Details at jazzartsgroup.org.
Stay with us in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Hour 2 of All Sides begins with last-minute tips for your 2011 tax returns. Join us for Hour 2 of All Sides from 11 till noon on 89.7. And rain showers in the forecast for today, a high of 63 degrees. Clouds tonight, a low of 36. All Sides continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We have an open forum, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What do you want to talk about? We've been talking about the new chief of police, Kimberly Jacobs. We've been talking about paper maps and the new Scioto Mile. Well, the plans to undam the Scioto River along the Scioto Mile. What do you want to talk about in the news? 614-292-8513. And Joe in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Thank you. I like CBS, 60 Minutes and Policewomen, but what I wanted to talk about was all the gas and oil that we have in Ohio and the surrounding areas. And I think we ought to process it in Ohio rather than building a pipeline all the way down to the southern coast and refine it and send it back. I think it would be more cost-effective, and we'd keep it in Ohio.
I thought one company was planning on building a refinery in Ohio.
Well, I hope so. But they're talking now about this pipeline to Texas or wherever, and then maybe processed and sent overseas. I don't know. But anyway, I think there's supposed to be so much gas and oil, I think we ought to use it here, is all I have to say.
Okay. Well, thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Take care. 614-292-8513. Jerome in Marysville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jerome.
Hi, Ann. Happy Easter and good Pesach.
Thank you.
I was intrigued by your point about the paper map, and you mentioned something about, you know, brain cells.
Well, does it use a different part of the brain to use a paper map versus just being told where to go by a GPS?
Absolutely. And you know, a lot of kids today can't read a analog clock. They have no idea how to tell time unless it's digital. And I stumbled across a really interesting tape measure a few weeks ago. My wife and I were looking at it, and it advertises itself as a self-centering tape measure. And we, you know, it's like, well, that's really cool. And we're looking at this thing, and what we realize is if you measure something a foot long, and at the top of the tape measure it says 1 foot, and below that it says 6 inches. So in other words, the tape measure company believes people can no longer divide by two.
Okay. Well.
Yeah. And this is
there
really
must be some data to back that up, or they wouldn't.
Absolutely. And this is frightening that someone someone building your home or repairing your home can't divide by two anymore.
Well, they're supposed to measure twice and cut once, so hopefully.
Yeah, but and you see other things, you know. You know, I have a discussion with someone on the local school board about, you know, calculators versus slide rules. And obviously no one uses a slide rule anymore. And I said, yeah, but we have no idea what it does to the development of the brain. You know, we have no idea if that eye-hand coordination process
contributes to how we process it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That is not simply information. It contributes to a way how we conceptualize the world, you know, and we don't know. I don't want to be a Chicken Little saying that our GPSs are going to, you know, destroy everything. But I suspect all these little things do affect, for better or worse, our ability to cognitively develop a map in our head of what the world looks like, distances. If we're constantly relying on technology to tell us stuff, we can't you know, do simple math. We make our kids work things out longhand, you know, even if they do computers, because we want them to be able to do things in their heads. You know, we have two nieces who go to abacus classes after school in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do incredible calculations in their head.
And that goes beyond just pencil and paper. That's very tactile.
Exactly. And I think it's that we know that people learn differently, and we also know for certain that the more senses you integrate into a learning process, the better and more fully you learn it. So when something is kinesthetic or tactile, you know, and the more senses you integrate, the better you learn it. So that's what concerns me. It's not so much relying on a GPS that concerns me as much as what cognitive losses kids or what cognitive gains kids or people aren't getting. But also I remember hearing, I think it was on NPR, that a couple people died in the Mojave Desert because the GPS was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I remember that accurately, but
well,
I'm
we missed
sure.
the first half of the Office Christmas party a few years ago because we were like, so. Anyways, well, Jerome, thanks for the call.
You bet.
Take care.
Bye, Ann.
Bye-bye. Catherine in Westerville, you want to talk about maps, too. Welcome to the show, Catherine.
Oh, hi. Gosh, we've had a lot of math talk.
That's okay.
My point is so simple. I think it just shows you where you are. And when we travel with our kids and we've done 46 states, I think that it's just they love knowing where they are. And I think just that part of self and a bigger picture, I just think that's a huge thing. It's huge. And there's so many different places you're going to go and maps that you're going to see and all of it just adds to the bigger picture of where you are in the world. And I hate to see that go away. We've traveled sometimes with just the GPS, and we find ourselves saying, well, what's over there?
Mm-hmm.
What's that street all about? And feeling like, oh, gosh, you know, if we had a map, we could just run over there and take a quick look.
You know, by the GPS, well, I mean, to a certain extent, they can tell you a little bit. Like, you can see if there's a lake or lots of buildings and that kind of thing.
They do, but I think there's mm-hmm. that wonderful aspect of here's a map, let's explore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. 46,
also,
I'm impressed, 46 states.
yes, it's been really fun, really, yeah. really fun. And we plan to do the other four, absolutely. They are Washington, Oregon, Hawaii, and Alaska, so we've done our best.
All right, well, great. Well, congratulations, and thanks for calling.
Oh, you're welcome.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Margaret in Marble Cliff, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I have an idea for a program for you sometime.
Okay.
And it is the function of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Chambers of Commerce throughout the land.
Mm-hmm.
And what do they actually do for job creation? I see ads all the time, and it seems fairly political, with a bias, I think. And I'm just interested to know, what is their function? What role do they play in helping people get jobs and helping small businesses in particular be able to do things that could create hiring?
Well, they seem to be very involved in politics.
That's what I mean. Is that their only function?
Well, to the extent that who they get elected is friendly to business,
mm-hmm.
And business development,
mm-hmm.
yes. Most job creation issues seem to wind up in the legislatures and in Congress, don't they, these days?
Well, it seems so. I guess that's true.
But it's an interesting question. Has it always been that way? Have chambers of commerce always been that involved financially?
I have not seen them advertising quite as much as they do in the last few years.
Well, it's still early yet in this political cycle. There's time. There's always time. So.
There is time.
Well, thanks for the call. It's an interesting idea.
Thank you.
Take care, Margaret. 614-292-8513. We have lines open if you want to give us a call. We've been talking about maps. We've also been talking about our new chief of police in the city of Columbus, Kimberly Jacobs, and we have an email from Doug. He writes, I think it's wonderful the mayor and Director Brown selected Kimberly Jacobs. Her openness to helping guide young ladies interested in this field is wonderful to hear. Hopefully she can bring a fresh perspective to the position and shake things up a little within the ranks. That's from Doug. And an email from Alex regarding Scioto River. As chair of the Friends of the Scioto River, I am pleased to see new parkland planned for downtown, but I never did hear anything about a name for it or even about naming rights being offered. Okay, so that's an interesting question. We have the Scioto Mile, but it's only a mile long. Maybe they can say the Scioto 4 miles or 3 miles or however long it is. They can just extend the name of the park. If anyone has ideas for naming the park, we'll take them. 614-292-8513. Maybe they just haven't gotten to that point, Alex. And that's coming down the pike or down the river, depending on your point of view. 614-292-8513. The lines are all open, and I still have about 8 minutes. So we can get a lot accomplished in 8 minutes, I have learned from 2.5 years on the radio. What do you think about maps? Someone said, well, there's been a lot of talk about maps. Well, maps are a big part of our lives, particularly if you're a traveler, but even if you just stay right in the city, just to get across the city. More and more people are relying on the GPS. And what's interesting is we may not have a choice eventually, because Bob Vitale in the Dispatch writes that county engineers and state transportation officials say they're printing fewer fold-up highway maps that never seemed, this is Bob's sense of humor, that never seemed to fold back up. The Ohio Transportation printed 3.8 million state highway maps in 2007, but only 1.5 million in 2011. That's a huge change. Now, it might be because of economics, certainly. They might have cut back, but probably has more to do with demand in the long run. Lisa, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Hi. Thanks so much. A great, great show. Always enjoyed it.
Thank you.
I am calling because I wanted to comment on maps. I love paper maps. I love old ones. I collect anything I can find on Ohio maps. But what's interesting is with the GPS and the technology, one of the things that we lose, maps are specific for people, and it connects us to other people. And our technology seems to be passing our humanity. I've been creating maps just from, well, let me back up a little bit here. But I've been using technology to create my own maps and to explain how things have changed so much in our society. And I was trying to figure out why things are the way they are in Ohio. Ohio has everything. It's a great state, but I see us falling backwards, and I was trying to figure out why. It seems strange that with topography, how it plays into where we are. And I've been using technology in the census data to figure out things, just all the disparities that we have, and crossing that over with our maps. Using technology, I've been able to reconnect with my fellow citizens by finding out their story a little bit before I meet them. And that is with the map. So finding out with unemployment, the rates of, you know, education, wealth attainment. Mm-hmm. And it's really maps have led me to this. And ironically, like I said, the technology has enabled me to print out these paper maps and to go to talk to people and find out what is really going on in my community. And I just find that it's really important that I think everybody know how to read a map, but also what maps can do for us.
It can do more than just take us to a place from point A to point B.
It takes us to people.
Tells a story about them as well.
And how we, and ironically, everybody talks about the GPS. It's always in cars, but we never get them, handheld, GPS. We never really get out of our car anymore, and we're such a rush to get from point A to point B. We miss a lot, and I think we can keep these maps in paper form, because, like I said, technology is passing our humanity, but those maps can really enable us to find out who we are as a community. And help us to connect to that and not lose sight of
who's down the street.
Yeah, and when the electricity goes out, we're all we got is each other. Not so much.
We've learned that the hard way. Well, Lisa, thanks for your call.
Oh, thank you so much.
Take care. Let's see. Thomas in Westerville, you wanted to talk about the Chambers of Commerce. Welcome to the show, Thomas.
Hey, Lynn, thanks for having me on.
It's Ann, but that's okay.
Oh, you know, I was thinking of Lynn Ziegefuss.
Julie Ziegefuss?
Yeah, and I'm terrible with first names.
That's okay, I am bad.
I got her
too.
Book, her brand new one. It came, and I'm in the middle of gardening, so I haven't even cracked it yet.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
But so, I did hear about it on your show. Hey, on Chamber of Commerce, I'm very involved with them years ago in a different part of Ohio, but just four specific things they do for job creation and economic development. And I don't work for them or anything, but they are a good network of small business owners. So in a specific area, and chambers work at national level, international level, and local level, but the local level is the real powerful one for, in my opinion, for job creation. Network of small business owners is an important function. It provides a place for folks to get together and as volunteers, you know, work on and talk about, you know, small issues. Economic development locally is an important thing that chambers participate in. So those chamber members may, you know, on a local level, it's like how many buildings are open in the industrial park? How many buildings are open downtown?
Well, how about the political thing that was raised earlier? I think her name is Catherine. That she's concerned that there's too much politics involved nowadays.
I think at the local level, most chambers do have a legislative affairs mm-hmm. committee. They'll have a legislative affairs breakfast. I think what she's talking about is more at that national level, which my point would be that the real job creation portion of the chamber, you know, happens at the local level. And specifically, there's an open building. How are we going to get,
right.
how are we going to market it to get it filled?
Okay.
And then like SCORE, the retired executives that volunteer their time to help people start small businesses and create jobs, those come through the chamber a lot of times, as well as like the Convention Visitors Bureau.
Well, it may be worth doing a show about. So thanks for giving us your perspective, Thomas.
Oh, absolutely.
Thanks for listening. Thanks to everybody for your calls and your emails, and thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.